Thank you so much for the invitation to be here today and to share our work. It's been particularly fun to be here this year because yesterday we got to share our work from Roxbury. So we got our local data, and today we get to share the work that we've been doing in Africa. So I'm pleased to be able to do that. Have no disclosures, unfortunately. Waiting for the day when I can say yes to this slide. So I want to just acknowledge that this is work that takes a big team. The partnerships we have established are with the University of Massachusetts Boston, the University of Nairobi in Kenya, the Tumutumu Hospital School of Nursing, and the Kajabi Hospital School of Nursing in Kenya. So it's an active partnership between our U.S. institution. And I should also say on there we have the additional partners by the Ministry of Health and the Kenya Nursing Council. So we have representation across the academic and the policy arenas. And our authors, Jacob Kariuki is a doctoral student. There's a number of undergraduate students up there, both from the U.S. and from Kenya, as well as faculty from Kenya. So we have a pretty nice representation of both faculty, students, and clinicians. One person up there is the chief nursing officer from the Ministry of Health. You know, by way of background, cardiovascular disease is now the leading cause of death in developing countries. I think we all think of it certainly in developed countries, but the fact that 80% of CVD deaths worldwide occur in developing countries is often a surprise to people. When most people think of Africa, they think of malnutrition, infectious diseases, malaria, HIV, TB, but they're not thinking of hypertension and cardiovascular metabolic diseases. And in sub-Saharan Africa, CVD accounts for 60% of the non-communicable deaths. So it's really the area that we've working on. And I'm a cardiovascular nurse clinician, and all of our work here in this country has been looking at minority communities, underserved and poor communities, in terms of looking at disparities in cardiovascular outcomes. So for me, it was a really nice opportunity to be invited to come to the African continent to begin to look at these disparities in a race-concordant population in a very different cultural context. This emerging epidemic of CVD is predicted to worsen, and it's often attributed to westernization of lifestyle, which when you look at our data, want to challenge that assumption. In our clinical work to date, we've observed high rates of hypertension, diabetes, obesity, and multiple cardiovascular risk in Kenya, but haven't observed the traditional Western atherogenic lifestyle behaviors, and I'll show you some of that data. Our work is guided by the social ecological model and principles of community-based participatory research. So from the social ecological model, meaning that we work both from the biobehavioral, but also looking at community context, looking at policies and sort of macro-level influences in a country, as much as individual-level, you know, biobehavioral and social constructs. When we say we're a community-based participatory research in Kenya, we're invited into the communities by the village chief and by the people in those communities, but we also have the invitation of the Ministry of Health. So we're working with the community health centers and have the policy buy-in at the highest levels, but also are there at the invitation and the explicit request of the communities, which really we feel is important to the sort of direction, the integrity, and the credibility of the work that we're doing in Kenya. So Kenya and sub-Saharan Africa really is a region in transition. You know, sub-Saharan Africa, urbanization, globalization, and westernization is coming to Kenya. It is definitely seeing an increase in gross domestic product, this changing lifestyles. You know, this impacts sociocultural factors. And as you get more urbanization, this leads to the rise of, or at least it leads to the hypothesized rise of, tobacco use, physical inactivity, unhealthy diets, the harmful use of alcohol, stress, and depression. And so these are the hypotheses we started with, that when we looked at Kenya, we really wanted to look and see the difference between some of our rural clinics that were in versus the urban clinics, and to think about this notion of westernization being the chief and the leading cause of why this transition is occurring. The fact is that Kenya is 80% rural, and keep that in mind as we start looking at our data. The mean lifespan in Kenya is 59 years, and the mean income is approximately $2 a day. So when you begin thinking about some of the recommendations for medications, you realize that people have to make basic life choices of whether they're going to eat or whether they're going to purchase medications. Our work to date has predominantly been in Central Province. We are up in the area of Nakuru, Nairobi, over here into Nyeri and Mount Kenya. So it's largely all in Central Province, which is in the mountains. For some context with this data is part of a larger partnership. And there's three pillars to the partnership. We have the service learning pillar, which is where one-to-one U.S. and Kenyan faculty, students, and clinicians are paired to go into these community health centers, with the support of the Minister of Health, to work with these community health centers to do some cardiovascular, metabolic, and pain screening, and to then triage people to be treated. So we also do bring a fair amount of medications with us. We match the meds we bring with the meds that are distributed by the government, so that rather than bringing something that people then won't have access to afterwards, you know, the medications that we bring supplement and extend the supply that the community health centers have. At the invitation of the Ministry of Health, we've conducted non-communicable disease training for these community health nurses. We're working in the area of NCD advocacy. We've presented at the ministry many times. We also had the opportunity to present to the Kenyan legislative body and at the Prime Minister's invitation to the Prime Minister's policy group. And really importantly, we also have the buy-in of the Nursing Council of Kenya, who meets with us. They support this work. They give us temporary licenses to practice when they're there. And they're really interested in the work we're doing in terms of scope of practice and curriculum. There's very little non-communicable diseases in the curriculum in most African countries. It's pretty much focused maternal and child health. So we've been working with them on looking at the curriculum. So I think that it really is an academic, community, and policy partnership. And then the research, you'll see a small piece of the research that I'm presenting here today. So today I'm just going to give you some of the data that comes from our cardiovascular screenings and is the work that we're doing here in the research arena. So the purpose of the particular data that I will share with you, which are the data from June 2012, we've just finished entering all of the summer 2013 data. We just finished getting 1,500 patients into the data set. As of now, we have almost 6,000 people in our data set. The 2012 data is 941 people. So each year really increases. The first year we only saw about 200 people. But our goal in 2012 was to add the systematic assessment of lifestyle risk factors, specifically smoking, physical activity, diet, and alcohol, to our usual cardiovascular screenings. We had asked questions before, but we elected to now do it much more formalized using the WHO questions as well as drawing from the behavioral risk factor surveillance questions and our NHANES questions in this country. The methods, this is a convenient sample of consecutive patients seen at these five Kenyan clinics. They're screened for cardiovascular risk factors by trained U.S. Kenyan teams. There's four rural clinics and one urban site. The training is extensive. Students are selected in December. We travel in June. They have about 40 hours of on-site training in this country prior to going in both cross-cultural care but also on cardiovascular disease. We now have all of those sessions recorded, and the students in Kenya get the same package. So that by the time we get there, our students are paired one-to-one prior to travel, so they are communicating by email before we leave. And in the three different regions we travel to, they have three different partners, either students from Nairobi, from Kajabi, or Tumutumu, but they've all been communicating before they get there. I have a partner. My partner in Tumutumu is the matron from the hospital. I have the head of the clinics when I get to another place. So we're establishing these long-term relationships, and we work sort of together all year long. The protocols that we use, physiologic measures, we decided to go for a race-concordant database, so we use the Jackson Heart Study for our protocols for measuring blood pressure, glucose, and anthropometrics. And for the physiological and behavioral measures, we use the questions from the BRFSS and the World Heart Survey. So the clinical data then are entered on-site. We then come back, and a whole team of undergrad students, volunteers, to sit and enter all of that onto Excel spreadsheets. We don't have the funding just yet to be able to do this electronically on site. This year, we do have a commitment, though, for bubble sheets, which is really, I think, a nice advance for us, which is a pretty inexpensive solution to this. We've gone through extensive layers of IRB approval, both here in the U.S. as well in Kenya. And we have to leave plenty of time for the IRB approvals in African countries. So this represents descriptive and correlational analysis of the data stratifying for race and for gender. So for in this sample of 941, the mean age was 49, with a standard deviation of about 18 years, largely female, which is the same as you'd see in screenings in this country. These are reported history of hypertension. 26% told us they had been told at one point that they had hypertension, but 6% said they had been told, at one point that they had a history of diabetes, 10% obesity, 3% high cholesterol, cardiovascular disease. You can see the smoking rates there are quite low. However, if you look down and look at the gender differences, which are significant, the history of smoking for men is 15% versus 2% for women. So while the smoking rates for the country, you don't really get a sense of the sort of scope of the problem until you dig down into stratifying by gender and by age. Same thing for alcohol. Alcohol is very infrequent in women, at least in Kenya, and I think it's pretty true for most of sub-Saharan Africa. I want to share some of the lifestyle characteristics with you, and I think part of this was because this was the hypothesis, but let me just draw your attention to a couple of points here. One is that if you look at only 15% of the population was active less than an hour a day, and when we reported it on your abstract, it's reported the opposite way, that like 80% are active. But that's dramatically different than what you would see in this country. So physical inactivity is not a big issue, and that was equally true in the urban area as it was in the rural area. And the reason for that is they don't have public transportation, and most people don't have cars. So even if you live in a city, you're walking everywhere that you go. So you, and also, people in the city do a little bit of farming. When you start to look at a healthy diet, you know, three or more servings of vegetables a day, one would think in a country that's agrarian that that would be much higher, but just like in the U.S., that's pretty low. It's only 31% get the recommended servings of fruits and vegetables. About 28% add salt to the table. That's pretty unheard of, except in the urban areas. However, 93% they add salt to cooking. And everyone says it's not salty food, and then you taste it. And they say, no, no, we don't use salt until you taste it, and you realize when they cook, there's a lot of salt going into that. So I talked about how low the overall smoking rate is and alcohol rate is. If you look up here, one of the issues with, you know, protein is they don't get much protein. And even beans, although, which is something that we're really trying to work at, you know, it's less than 50%. They don't drink a lot of soda. They don't have a lot of saturated fat, except they cook with this stuff that's like an orange Crisco. So it's this solid fat that they're using. So that's the one area to look at. And we were also pretty surprised to see such a high prevalence of stress. A third on the PHQ-2 reporting symptoms of depression, and 66% reporting that their health is fair or poor. So what we kind of take away from this, that the epidemiologic transition has been attributed to globalization. So here you see, right, couch potatoes. You're not seeing what you see in this country. We're not seeing physically inactive people. We're not seeing very high rates of smoking. We're not seeing high rates of saturated fat in the forms of dairy and meat. Where we are seeing that this fits the paradigm is in the area of fruits and vegetables, or unhealthy intake of that, and certainly stress and depression being up a little bit. So it's curious. I mean, it doesn't fit. So now let's look and see the rates then we saw for blood pressure. So we had a nice distribution. Remember, the mean lifespan is 59 years, but we got a nice distribution of younger, middle-aged, and older people. Draw your attention down here to the fact that 31% had a BMI between 25 and 29. 20% had a BMI greater than 30. So here you're talking about more than half the population that's the criteria for obesity. What people think of for Africa is they think of malnourished, and that's only about 4% of the population. In blood pressure, we certainly saw a high percentage of people who came to see us that had blood pressure greater than or equal to 140 over 90. Diabetes, seeing random blood sugars, fasting in the range of greater 9% for greater than 126 in fasting, but look down here in your pre-diabetes range and it's up to about 12%. So we're having high prevalence of high waist, that metabolic parameters of high waist circumference, high BMI, high blood pressure, and high blood glucose. When you look by age, you see the same things there that we see in this country, but if you look for systolic blood pressure greater than 140 in the younger group compared to the middle-aged group compared to 2 out of every 3 older people greater than 55 having high blood pressure, which is markedly significant. Similar to this country, once people have hypertension, dissimilar to here, there's a lot of people that aren't aware that they have it, but once aware, they are getting recommended to get meds, but very few people are controlled, and that's because they may get recommended to get it, they may get started on it, but they're not continuous, they don't have continuous follow-up. So it's not just that we need to identify these people, we need to have the resources to have them seen and to have them seen consistently. Over 50% of people have clustering of risk factors, which we all know puts them at much higher risk to have a stroke. You can see that both when you use a standardized global risk score, about 42% on global risk score come out as high risk. So in conclusion, we were able to screen for physiologic measures and lifestyle behaviors in a convenient sample of community dwelling Duendes. In those individuals, the prevalence of clustering of risk factors is high. However, we're not seeing the standard lifestyle risk factors. So they challenge current assumptions about globalization. So some of the things that we're doing in terms of research is increasing the number of urban sites, looking at risk prediction models to help identify where the priorities are for getting meds, working with region-specific diet assessments. We've just begun, we've got some abstracts just coming out on risk prediction, looking at differential etiology in terms of from a genetic perspective, beginning to start some intervention groups, meaning that there's self-management groups for diabetes that are started at these community centers, and that comes down here into the area of capacity strengthening, using community health workers and using the nurses in the community health centers to task shift in order to be able to begin to treat. And from the policy perspective, we certainly have the Ministry of Health and the Kenya Nursing Council. So I wanted to finish with this notion that our global health nursing is around the world and around the corner. So I think it's as important to us to have our hand in the work of looking at trying to make a dent in disparities for Black Americans as it is for us to be over there in Kenya finding some of these interesting questions. And there are things that nobody's talking about. Everyone universally says all the problems in sub-Saharan Africa are globalization. We haven't found that to be necessarily the case. Thanks so much.